Hey listeners, welcome to Trust in Tech, where we have conversations with folks helping the internet and society thrive. As a reminder, the views stated in this episode are not affiliated with any organization and only represent the views of the individuals. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi, welcome to Trust in Tech. I am here today with Asaf, and we're going to talk about all things scams. Do you want to introduce yourself and say hi to everybody?
Hey, Alice. Thanks for having me. My name is Asaf Kipnis. I've been working in information security and integrity and trust and safety for about 10 years now. My last 8 years, I spent at LinkedIn for 3 years and then Meta for 5 years. Was part of the April layoffs with other great people. A lot of my work was around, all of my work was around financially motivated actors making money in a multiplicity of ways on the platform. Around 2020, I was working more on what is called inauthentic behavior or coordinated inauthentic behavior for what I call for profit, which is very different from nation state stuff that was going around. And in my last year, on the team, I was a part of the e-crime team, I was a part of the e-crime team for 5 years, and then in the last year or so, I was the manager of that team, and we got really, really into scams, which initially I wasn't super keen on as far as kind of complexity, but then when it got into pig butchering scams, it got really, really, really interesting. And I find myself doing it now after I got laid off. I just keep researching AI stuff, pig butchering operations, keep letting scammers try to scam me every once in a while, which is fun. And a lot of that stuff on my own right now.
For those who are listening who don't know what a pig butchering scam is, I know because I've been working at dating apps for the past 13 years. And like Meta, they are a vector space for some of these spams. But can you explain to our listeners what they are and then the sophistication level that you mentioned?
It's funny. Usually when someone asks me write down something about what are pig butchering scams, I'll usually send them to an article that an expert wrote because someone had probably written it before me and I don't like to rehash things in writing that are already done really well. But from what I've seen, pig butchering scams are, if we go from, this time I'll go from the way, way, way bottom all the way to the top. So the way bottom, I mean the where the victim is. So the victims, unlike what I would call classic scams, are no longer, we've moved away from older people. The victims are a lot of times younger people, probably in their 30s to 50s, who are from good financial standing. And the way the scam happens is that someone will contact you on some kind of social media. So it could be, doesn't have to be social media, but it could be on LinkedIn, on Meta, on any other platforms. It definitely happens, Alice, as you know, on dating apps. And a lot of the times, I know people really like to talk about that. It happens on SMS. I got one yesterday.
Yeah, those weird text messages. So I'll put an article in the show notes. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to read a few of these because they're so funny and people listening will recognize some of these. So it's stuff like, James, can you tell me how your handmade meatballs are made? They're so delicious. Or let's find another good one. How much do you pay to buy your new house in Kentucky? Or, hey, this is my new number. We should meet to go golfing. And I've gotten some that are even more sophisticated that are based on my employer. So it's a fake text supposedly from somebody that I work with, which is a variation on the theme.
That's interesting. That's
they're all pretty pretty funny. So the SMS ones are just meant to get you talking. And then you say, no, you have it totally wrong. I don't make meatballs. What are you talking about? And they're like, oh, so sorry, but let's keep talking anyway. You're fascinating.
Yes. And it becomes very complimentary very fast. The last one I got, I'm looking at it now, is just a picture of a young woman. That was it. And then when I didn't respond, it said, hey, are you busy now? Which else I thought was very lazy. That those conversations from, if you have some understanding of social engineering, there's a lot of social engineering there. There's an example that really good social engineering people do is they will ask you, hey, is your phone number, blah, 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 blah. And you'll respond, oh, no, not at all. It's this. Because people are very happy to give that data out because it's kind of like I'm correcting you. In any case, it starts in all these kind of channels. 100% of them will go to an encrypted channel, which to me already shows some sort of sophistication or savviness, because they know the whatever platform it's going to be, it's probably going to identify where this conversation is going to go. And the conversation, another thing that's different about it is, unlike romance scams or crypto scams, it doesn't get to the point right away. It's kind of fostering a friendship. And as they foster a friendship, they're showing you how much money they have. And at the same time, they're gauging how much money you have. How much money are you comfortable with spending? When I did it, when I let the scammer kind of bait me, I didn't have the energy to go to all this. I kind of let them kind of get to their point quickly. But then they will, in essence, without going into too much detail on it, they will try to get you to invest money in either crypto or gold futures or something, and they will convince you that this is a great investment. Look, I am investing too. And then it kind of like, we'll get you to invest more and more and more. I recently just spoke to someone he said that his cousin's friend got tricked. And I immediately asked, how old is your cousin's friend? And he said, my age. And this person was in their 20s. And that person got duped out of $50,000. And that's,
oh, wow,
that's a very small amount of money compared to other people. I often get asked, why is it called pig butchering? I've heard multiple kind of variations of the answer, but the answer I kind of stick to is, I don't want to speak to cultural things, but from what I understand in the Chinese culture, pig butchering, actually, I wrote an article when I was at Meta, and I wanted to write what pig butchering was. So I went to ChatGPT and I said, ChatGPT, tell me what pig butchering is. And it got really detailed at how to butcher a pig. It was like, trigger warning. The way you butcher a pig is you take every single piece and you use it. You don't leave anything. It kind of became within that scammer community, we're going to butcher this pig. We're going to take everything out of this, what they call a client, and leave them with nothing. Whatever money they can invest, we will take. And I put invest in huge quotes because it's not investing anything. So that is one piece, the scam piece. What makes it, beyond the complexity of this, what makes it leaps and bounds more complex is how this scam comes to be. If you look at the earlier days, there are things that still happen, like what people call 419 scams, Nigerian scams, they're definitely not only out of Nigeria, and kind of romance scams, crypto scams, they're very, it's not exactly opportunistic, but it's kind of one-offs, and it's not highly complex infra happening around it. It's just people doing it, and the people who are scamming you are the people making the money. Pig butchering scams, and now I'll go kind of one step out from the scams. It's people who are sitting in these complexes, and those are part of the next step, but they sit in these complexes and they're basically bound to their chairs And their job, again, it's not exactly a job, but their job is to scam people over and over and over. They don't make any money out of it. They're essentially people who were abducted to live and work in these scam centers. So as I was baiting a scammer, I couldn't help but feel bad for the person I'm baiting because I don't know what's going to happen to this person. And there's videos going around the internet, these people getting hit with cattle prods and all kinds of horrible, horrible things. But these people are working for the scammer organization. So the first piece, if you look at it from a policy perspective, which is where it gets real messy, is the first piece is scams. The second piece is a human exploitation piece. And then you have the third piece. So the third piece is who is running this thing. So initially, and this is all from things I've seen and read, and then I've heard from other things. So the triads, it's multiple triads in China, before 2020, wanted to get into casinos, built these huge infrastructure, this huge infrastructure to house people and have casinos. And then 2020 came and then nobody's going to casinos at any point. And they're kind of stuck with these giant buildings. So they pivoted like any good business. Okay, we're just going to get people in these places to scam people because that makes a lot of money. How do we get these people? Haha. We post jobs on places like any job boards. LinkedIn is one of them. I'm sure there's many others. Come work for us for doing, customer service. Someone just reached out to me on LinkedIn, one of those scams, customer service, whatever it is, sales, something you can do on the phone. And then you'll get the job. And they're usually, from what I understand, targeting people in APAC. And then you come, you apply, you get the job, they take your passport, they put you in this place. And initially you've been trafficked at that point, you cannot leave. And that is run by the triads. From what I understand recently, the Mexican cartels got into this a little bit because it's proving itself to be such a worthwhile endeavor. But this third piece is a dangerous organization piece. And that's a completely, and I'm not talking about a specific company that has these policies, but if you think about it from a policy perspective, then you have a dangerous organization. And usually platforms deal with dangerous organizations in one way, which is like gangs. They deal with human exploitation in a different way, and they deal with scams in a different way. And I feel like in the beginning of this whole thing, a lot of the larger companies, and I don't know if it's the same at Grindr, Alice, you can tell me, it was kind of like, which piece of this do we deal with? Which piece is currently the worst? Because that's how companies work. Which piece is the worst fire? So how do we deal with this? And I think that created a vacuum in which it was really hard to deal with these pig butchering scams at the beginning. Because it's so different from how you deal with scams.
The other thing that is tricky from a company perspective, and you mentioned this earlier, is the actual scam itself, the proof of the bad thing happening, takes place off platforms on encrypted channels. And so often when you're looking at these accounts, you can, an experienced person can look at them and say, oh yeah, this looks totally off and sketchy. Nobody this pretty would be messaging, you know, hundreds of lonely men and giving away all of their investment advice or giving away their phone number, I guess, because the investment part takes place on an encrypted channel. But like, you know, you can look and say, this is not how a normal dater looks at things or interacts with users. But really, the actual proof is pretty hard to find, on our end, at least. You can ban accounts because they look off and they look sketchy and you can tell that it's not authentic, but you don't exactly know what they're leading to unless you have people send in very detailed reports. And even then, what do you do with it when it's off your platform?
Exactly. And that also speaks to the complexity or the savviness of these actors, that they know where are the pitfalls, where are they going to get caught. And I agree. Someone who has worked in the space, we all have this like spidey sense. And you look at I look at an account, I don't need to do anything. It's immediate, this is bad. But as someone that worked on this stuff, and then you get into within these platforms where you don't get a lot of information about the scam, you just have the origin. Even to ban accounts, there is always policy around that, meaning you need to preserve voice, you need to not have a ton of false positives. Yes, it's an account that I as a person that's been working in the space, it's clear to me, but I have no evidence, no hard evidence that I can provide to say, this is a scam. I have nothing. I have my experience of what I've seen, but I don't have anything to ground it in, which is a thing a lot of people get stuck on. And I've seen also external advocates get stuck on, and they say, isn't it obvious that these are bad? Yes, to us. But I don't have any proof. Like someone standing on this corner being looking real shifty is not a good reason to arrest them. And if you do that at scale, that's really bad, because that leads to all kinds of horrible stuff. And on the other hand, banning accounts one by one is a tactic I am very much against, because it does not work at all. Specifically with these accounts, with these scams, is we have to think about upstream the amount of resources that they have. This is not a group of people sitting somewhere and just like making the accounts themselves. This is a large operation. I've had multiple conversations with ex-coworkers who were in the nation state space, and I was like, would you compare this to nation state? And I got an array of answers, mostly kind of, no, nation state is actually, you can't compare it, because nation state is kind of like multiple levels of complexity. We were trying to compare it to something. I don't know why I'm trying to do that, but I'm trying to kind of like get a hook of people understanding this is not your grandmother's scam. This is, what I'm trying to convey is that the level of sophistication and resources, maybe that's where I need to go with, the level of resources behind this is unparalleled with other scams. You have the amount of money to put into this. So you see pictures of people sitting there with like 30 phones messaging people. It's very different also from nation state, because nation state you work 9 to 5 usually, and I'm happy for people to correct me. But these are slaves. They work all the time, constantly, and they have to make this work. The other pieces of sophistication that I've seen that also show that there is money here is the amount of domains that they're able to produce. And when I say domains, so when they get you to invest, they want you to invest in something, it needs to look tangible, it needs to look real. So they have these really good looking domains that look like these marketplaces for gold futures for some reason, or crypto. It looks like other ones that are legit. And there's a lot of these domains. It's not very expensive to make them, but you need expertise to create a web page that looks this good. It looks really, really good. And then they amazingly also have verified Google Play Store apps that, from what I understand, are just wrappers. They just go to the website. But they have that infrastructure, which is, again, a lot of money, a lot of time. And above that, they have all the resources of how do I speak to someone who's the beginning of the chain, in the middle of the chain, the end of the chain? What do I do about if they're kind of pushing back? Because I pushed back when I talked to the scammer about this website looks really fishy, and they have a narrative to explain to you why it looks fishy, and like, oh yeah, ad blockers are really sensitive, and it's like, not, it's not true, and stuff like that. So the level of financial backing is it's very high, and that makes this a lot more complex than anything else, and it's and actually a lot more successful than any other games.
And it's adversarial.
Yes.
It's actively adversarial in the way that hackers are, where, you know, you can think of a cybersecurity team working against hackers, and the cybersecurity team puts in a patch and closes the door in one way, and then the bad hackers find a way around and come do it. And that's exactly what it's like with these scams and, you know, these anti-fraud teams, is anytime that you find a pattern, they'll create a new pattern. They'll know that you found the pattern, and then they'll create a new pattern because they're financially motivated to do so, and they're organized and have been doing this for as long as we've been fighting it. So they're just as experienced.
And that's something that I feel a lot of people, the exact things that you said, is the thing that I feel a lot of people miss sometimes. Taking a step back from what you said about the cybersecurity teams, in my work at Meta, my team only worked on high complexity adversarial networks. So everything that we have seen way before we've dealt with this piece, everything is highly adversarial. Anything that you do, I always like to call it, it's like if I shift to the left, they'll just shift to the left an inch away, an inch further. Just kind of, I'm going to get in your gray area, whoop, and I'm there. And I've seen it in multiple types of abuse. I've seen fake accounts that were 10 years old, which was shocking to me. Out of places that you would not expect. This is not scams. This is other stuff that what I feel a lot of times is missed is that these people are not going to stop. They're not going to find legitimate jobs tomorrow. This is how they feed their children. And they will change and shift continuously with you because this is what they do. And I think what happens a lot of times is we put in a, and that happens with the same with like ransomware, and we were trying to compare it to ransomware as a service, and I was reading about it, and it's very different. It's very similar, sorry. What happens is that the team will put something in place and they already left something inside the system. They're selling the access to someone else. And that's exactly what's happening with adversarial actors. And what happens is that the platforms will put a machine learning algorithm specific to this specific attack, or will put a rule specific to this specific attack. Yes, it will stop them for a very short amount of time, and then they will come back doing some other flavor. There will always be a different flavor. And sometimes we miss that because we're like, yes, this is measured. This is good. We put everything in place. We can go deal with another thing. And that other fire is just an ember now, and eventually it will be a forest fire. And I've seen that happen a lot in a lot of places. And when you're searching for adversaries, this is where sometimes I feel it's closer to like ransomware as a service or nation state, is you got to continue tracking this. And that's very difficult for a company that needs to keep doing other things. You can't continuously track an adversary when you have hundreds and thousands of adversaries. And that's where they get us. I always like to compare this, and people who know me are rolling their eyes, to my work in the military, where I was in Israel and the northern border. And there would be some stuff that looks like benign activity, but it wasn't. It was them checking our defenses over and over and over. And they have resources and they have time to find the weaknesses, to find those gray spaces. And if you compare it to social media or dating, they find the gray area between your policies, between your silos, because they don't have silos. And also an attacker has the privilege of doing whatever they want in any place they want with a small force. A defender needs to defend the whole thing, an attacker needs to find one little spot where the defender missed. I feel like I'm going into a rant here, but on kind of adversarial behavior.
This whole podcast is ask people what it is that they really want to rant about and then bring them on.
So I'm a big fan of
welcome to rant.
Big fan of understanding the adversaries and kind of understanding that and appreciating how much harder it is to defend than it is to attack. You just have to find the one weak spot and you can spend as long, well, they can spend as long as they want on it. And I feel that they do that, well, they do that all the time. And if they the hold, they're just going to sit on it until the opportune time and then exploit it. While we feel very secure that we've defended everything and we plugged all the holes and we made all the algorithms and rules, which that's how they get off in the end.
The other thing that I've seen, which is making this increasingly complex, is the use of account takeovers in seeding these accounts. So at first with account takeovers, we were seeing these big databases of email and password combinations on hacked websites. And then those databases would be sold and they would just try that email address and password combo on any website they could think of and see if it would log them in. And if it logged them into a dating app or a social media company, then they'd be able to use these accounts, which are completely legitimately created real user accounts with no red flags whatsoever until they get logged into. Then, of course, platforms have kind of cottoned on to that, and there are all kinds of things in place that platforms can use to see, oh, okay, this is potentially a suspicious login or this account may have been compromised. What I've also seen is the evolution from that is these blackmail scams that we see where on dating apps, at least, like compromised photos will be shared, or like nude photos, and then they'll say, I'm going to send these nude photos to everybody that you know, unless you send me a bunch of money and unless you create a new account for me with like your new credentials. Then those accounts get sat on for a really long time and then they get used in a new kind of scam. So they're running all of these different things all at the same time to create accounts, to get access to accounts, to make the accounts seem legitimate, and then to find victims from this legitimate account and then get them off platform. So from a platform perspective, often you're just seeing like a real account that was created in the United States and has been in good standing for 5 or 10 years and then ask somebody to have a discussion off platform and none of it seems like particularly worrying. Until, of course, you dig in and understand more. So it's definitely very complex.
Yeah. And so on other platforms, what you're talking about would be called, I don't know if you guys call it sextortion, but it's basically sextortion.
Yeah.
But what another thing that I've noticed that even other departments were kind of, I feel like sometimes we ask the wrong questions, is we fail to understand, or maybe we kind of like more comfortable in thinking that a romance scammer is just a romance scammer. That's all they do. Or a pig butchering scam is just a pussy. Or for example, from what you're saying, these people are doing sextortion and that's it. And then you try to categorize and put in these buckets and start measuring them. But like you said, that's not the only thing. They're diversifying. They're not doing, you don't do one thing. They don't do one thing. They'll do sextortion. That makes money. Huh. I can also use it to have them create accounts. And I can also use it for other things. Interesting stuff that I saw is you would have one account scamming someone for crypto to put it into a US bank account. And then you have a completely different account. If you follow the bank account, someone in the US created that bank account for a romance scam. So you have a scammer working two different angles to get their money from point A to point B while creating like a real bank account in America because they're scamming one person and they're scamming another person completely. The taxonomy is completely different. And sometimes we're so much more comfortable just saying, this is a pig butchering scam. This is a romance scam. This is exactly what they do. And this is the only thing they do. And we forget. The other part of it that you were saying is, and kind of going back to most platforms that are not encrypted. Well, first of all, the encrypted platforms can't see anything. From my experience, no matter what anybody says online, they can't see anything. And that's a big problem. And the bad guys know this. But a lot of times I've seen these platforms are trying to rely on users that tell them, hey, this is bad, and you report it, and okay, I'm relying on reporting, and I'm just taking these accounts down. You can keep taking these accounts down forever on reports, because as we know, users don't report or report very small amounts. And like we said, these people have a lot of money. They will throw thousands and thousands of accounts that they made, took over, bought, could be a million things. What I've been trying to do is, when you look at these accounts that are baiting, they're just starting the conversations, you need to get a good amount of those and then start trying to understand the common features between all of them or between groups of them. So like you said, there's compromised ones. Okay, let's try to understand compromised TTPs. What are the compromised TTPs that will tell me? And then start kind of chaining all of the indicators. That's the only way to do a large scale mitigation of this, and understanding, yes, this account is reaching out to a person, but what is behind this account? What are the indicators that I can compare to the rest of the accounts in the infrastructure to say, all of these accounts in the infrastructure are doing a similar thing and have similar kind of characteristics? It's very hard to do. It's very time intensive and work and labor intensive, but it's either that or doing it kind of whack-a-mole. The other thing that I think is super important is relying on external reporting. You have all these advocates that are sitting there talking to users. Talk to them. If you're having a hard time convincing your leadership that this is important, go talk to those people. They will give you all the information that you need about people harming themselves or the amount of money. Talk to the NCFTA, get user reports, get law enforcement referrals because law enforcement keeps, people go to law enforcement and they have this information. There needs to be a way to share it. The problem I've seen there, especially with advocates, is the advocates have so much data, but the expected, so like I said, the worst thing to do is to take a group of accounts and just smash them down. Like, yes, you don't want to keep them on the platform, but if you just smash them down, you've lost all your information. Advocates usually want to see immediate results. Like, I gave you these accounts. Why aren't they off? Why aren't they off the platform tomorrow? And that's something I've been talking to advocates is, this is not an effective way to do anything. You want to take these accounts. You want to learn as much as you can to correlate them, making clusters around them. And then not only will you take down those thousands of accounts, you'll take down 100,000 accounts if those exist on your platform. And because you are able to learn how the adversary looks like, from my perspective, also from being in the e-crime team and starting out as a team that would like do a lot of attribution, and I really like attribution and kind of going after the bad guys, that's not always the right thing to do. Like, going after the bad guys is nice, but it's not always something that produces the result that you need. Because what happens is you'll go after one operation, and let's say that you've shut down this entire operation. They're not doing anything anymore. Can you measure how much that actually affected the entire space? Did you spend a lot of time trying to find this person that might or might not stop? The time that you could have just understood how the bad activity looks like and mitigated at scale, so it just cannot happen on your platform again. It's just kind of like, it's a give and take. Like, it might be worth it, it might not be.
So beyond those things, what do you think on a systemic level we can do to prevent some of these scammers? Because leaving it up, as we both know, leaving it up to individual platforms to do things is this game of whack-a-mole, basically. So what else is there? What other options do we have?
So it has to be dealt with holistically. That's fairly obvious, kind of from what you said. So we talked about it earlier, you and I, about education, user education. The more user education that's out there, you're at least eroding some piece. And maybe people would educate each other and kind of, a lot of users don't have a place to go to understand what's going on. Also, once you have these mitigation tools in play, you can do the education in threat. You can say, this looks weird. Hey, maybe you should be worried about this message and things like that. Like I mentioned, you need to really understand how it looks on platform and work to mitigate it at scale. Again, this is within silos of platforms, but there needs to be a collaboration between, an in earnest collaboration between platforms, law enforcement, and advocates. Having an advocate go to one platform or having one platform go to law enforcement, you're taking tiny slivers of the problem and you might be mitigating it for yourself. You probably aren't, but you're not making a dent in the problem at all. So an example would be, you're seeing it on Grindr and an advocate will tell you, oh, I know people are coming from Grindr and going to these domains. Okay, where are they hosted? Okay, let's talk to law enforcement. Let's talk to the domain hosting company. Let's talk to other companies, kind of come together and say, okay, can we all go and at the very least get this domain hosting company to not host this stuff anymore? That would make a dent. Get information from across companies. And this is very difficult. It's very easy to talk about companies collaborating and then talking to law enforcement. That's non-trivial, but it's possible to go get information and then convey it to law enforcement. The problem in that space that I have the feeling you know is that collaborating across, collecting information across platforms and then going with it to law enforcement doesn't look good. If we go,
not great for user privacy.
Exactly. So it's not great. It looks really, really bad. And you can say, I'm doing this only for scams. But the fact that you're doing it doesn't look good. Exactly. It looks really bad for user privacy. Some platforms have more sensitive populations than others. That would be, so this is where we get stuck. Platform collaboration looks bad. Platform collaboration with law enforcement looks bad and could be bad. But I think from what I've seen, having platforms try to deal with it in a monolithic way doesn't work. And then not leveraging, I don't want to blame the platforms, but not leveraging these advocates that have so much information or just like law enforcement outreach that you can use that has so much information and kind of building it is very difficult because like I said, you have a lot of people that are very passionate about it that will give you a ton of data and then not understand because you can't tell them why it's taking so long. Like, oh, you're not doing anything. It's very possible that the company is not doing anything. I'm not going to say that. But even if they are doing anything, it will take a while. And something I've been talking to with some advocates, having grace, these people actually want to do this, but putting it out there, we want to do this. Being more forthcoming with the fact that you do want to do this will make a big difference because if you don't say anything, you just say, well, companies are not very inclined to say we have pig butchering on our platform because then you said you have pig butchering in your platform.
Yeah, and that's the tricky thing with user education as well. You know, we've sort of had, I've had internal discussions over the years at a variety of platforms where there's some people sometimes have the fear that, hey, if we warn people against a certain kind of scam, then they're going to think that everybody on the platform is a scammer, and then they're not going to come use us anymore. They're going to go to the competition instead. And so I think over the last few years in general, across social media platforms and dating platforms, I've seen much, much more willingness to come out and actually proactively educate people about what to look out for. I think for a long time, it was just like, let's just stay quiet and pretend it's not happening and not scare people off too much. And now I see a lot of platforms have guides and, you know, a Grindr. My former colleague Lily wrote this amazing scam awareness guide, and we've been pretty proactive about sharing that out with people. So I think that's at least a good step, and something that I've seen change over the last few years in general in the industry. But it's just going to get more and more prevalent. So one thing that you noticed early, or that you mentioned earlier, was these coordinated, inauthentic behavior farms, basically troll farms, and that you think AI is going to be a big factor there. So,
yeah, thanks for that. I really
scams aren't the half of it.
I really love that that space. I've been kind of, because I have tons of free time, I've been playing with AI. I actually have been, before we go into that space, I also looked how I can use AI to identify victims and identify what's the best persona to attack that victim. And it was really cool. I started playing with it, and then I said, here's the person, give me the person type or the persona that this person is most likely to respond to. And it gave me another person. And then we assigned names to them. Like, what should Alice say to Jack to get Jack to invest in crypto? And that was terrifying. Honestly, I don't think they need that. The pig butchering, they just need to work on their language, because their language is very clearly translated. And that would be super easy. Going to these troll farms, I hate calling them troll farms, but I keep seeing that because they're not. I keep seeing that on articles.
What do you think a better term is? What would you rather call
it? In my mind, a troll farm is these people who just like post a bunch of comments, kind of trying to get things riled up. That's not what these people do. So these are more, and this is stuff that was happening between 2016 and 2018. It was very prevalent everywhere. And you would have these, it started in North Macedonia. You'd have these North Macedonian people who saw that anything that has to do with civic discourse in the United States, and by the way, we're taking a complete left turn from the other conversation. Anything that has to do with discourse in the United States online that's civic gets clicks. And how does normal media make money? Clicks, because that goes to ads. And I'm assuming the conversation was, how do we get people to click on our stuff to go to our ads? So if you look at it, especially around those times, around Trump, and then I'll stick for 16 to 18 at this moment, that anything that said Trump would get a click, whether it's from the left or from the right, it would get a click. And they said to themselves, okay, let's just make our own quote unquote media companies and make money. And they got in a room or multiple rooms and just shadow wrote, made these websites, very simple, and then shadow wrote some articles or scraped them off other articles, gave them really clickbaity names, and then seeded it all over social media. There's several articles that I saw that were saying that a huge percentage of Americans clicked on those. And unlike the nation state operations that have specific reasons, I want people to think this, I want people to do this, for them, they have one. I want people to click. It doesn't matter what's in the article. I'm not trying to make you do anything. It's mostly I try to rage farm you. Kind of like, get angry, get any emotion in order to click on it. And once you click on it, yes, there's an article. There are multiple other articles on this website. It's jam-packed with ads. If you go from a different device, from a phone, it goes into all these, you don't even see anything because it just jumps to all these crazy pop-ups. But if you think about it, most of the people are on a computer that click that. After that happened, and it was really bad, it was very obvious. There were several articles, I think it was the New York Times. Coming up to 2020, there was a real push to have that not happen again. They did completely try to do it again. They did to a degree. And we were doing a lot of work on kind of shutting down these, what is called, I think they're calling it now civic spam or coordinate. It's a type of coordinated authentic behavior. But it's, again, people posting tons and tons of articles to gain traction to their websites. All the work that was done, I can tell you about Meta, was very, very successful. Not only because I was part of it, which was awesome, but there were a lot of good people that were doing it, the actual work. I was just waving my hands. It made it a lot more difficult for them to post all that stuff. We actually, there were some articles that were showing that a lot of those people towards the end of 2020 were moving to Parler, which was great. Go to Parler. My concern is that this is coming back. 100%. I know platforms are somewhat ready for it, but from stuff that I've been playing around. So, okay, if I take a step back and you think about how this operation is done, you need a lot of articles. And there was a podcast that Hallie was doing explaining how if you were connecting all these articles to each other, they have the perception of being true. So you can do that. The thing is, that's very labor intensive. It's very scrapey, which is fairly easy to detect because if you have people from other countries, they're not going to write these really good articles or even semi-good articles. But if you use an AI writer, I specifically played around with it and I felt really uncomfortable posting it online. I went into several AI, several LLMs. Didn't work. I went to one that I've never heard of before called Write AI Writer. And I said, hey, AI writer, write me an article about DeSantis and Trump having a fist fight in Mar-a-Lago. And I was like, sure, dude. And it wrote a full article and it looked real good. And then I went and my friend created a picture for me on an AI generator of Trump getting like held back. I'd click on that. It said that they're having a fist fight. And now I'll make, with the AI in 5 minutes, I will make 30 other ones or 100 other ones. And I will tell it to link them all to each other. And then you have this very, very big network. Forget the fact that I can see nation state actors using this to just like confuse. This is a great way to make money. While everybody else is going to be focused in this space on interference in the election. Specifically, my belief is if Trump runs, this is very easy money. There's full operations. There's the Facebook in 2019 took down this operation called the BL. I put a link on it. It will probably be in the show notes. They are a very interesting operation that they kind of made fake news. They kind of tied themselves to Trump idealistically, but also to make money. And they were making boatloads of money just from just these like clickbaity articles. And they were a legit news corporation. And that's what they were doing. But they actually needed writers for that. So you're now taking away the need for writers and the need for scraping and the need to rely on anything real. Just write clickbait stuff. What I wrote would get too much attention. But figure out something that will not get too much attention, but people will still click on it and then disseminate it on platforms. And again, there's a lot of mitigations in place right now. So if you try to repeat 2018, 2020 tactics, it's not going to work. But they've had time. they have time until 2024 figure it out, which is something I'm very concerned with.
The theme between both of these is lots of coordinated bad actors with time on their hands and financial motivation. And even though it's complicated and platforms are doing their best to making it harder, they still make a ton of money with scams and ad clicks and who knows what else.
And they can be persistent over time, where I feel platforms can't. There's multiple reasons why legitimately platforms can't be persistent over time. Products change, people change, like move over. And there's always going to be 1 to 100 fires that are more important in the moment than fixing things at scale. And I'm sure you're very familiar with battling fires instead of at the moment, because crap, comms is all over me about this, or legal, or the news, who knows? And an entire effort shifts to do something else. And now, not to harp on layoffs, I'm sure layoffs didn't help. Someone asked me if I think the scam work at Meta is going to be different because they laid me off. No, I don't. I really don't. Because I'm one person. But when kind of like you erode the trust and safety mechanism, it's going to be hard to pivot into these new spaces that, like, oh crap, we need a task force for this now, but we don't have anybody anymore because we're all on these fires.
Is there anything you want to leave our listeners with? Any final thoughts or comments?
Just one thing is, this is for everybody in the space. If you want to work together, and when people know me hear this, they'll giggle, or chuckle. Like, have grace for the other people, which I know one person always tells me to assume good intent, and it's very hard. But assume people are trying to do their job on both spaces, and they're not trying to harm how you do your job. And the more we assume that, the more we are able to harm the adversaries instead of just hamstringing ourselves.
That's a great motivational ending. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being a guest. I enjoyed your rants and raves. And I even learned a little bit as well. So I'm sure that our listeners will learn a lot as well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it. As you can see, I enjoy talking about this stuff.
If you enjoyed this conversation, please share with your friends. It really does make a difference. This episode was produced by Tal Habeg, edited by me, Alice Hensberger, music by Zhao Shen, and help from our intern, Jacob Morse. Thanks, Jacob. Special thanks to the Integrity Institute. They have a new fellows program, and I'm thrilled to say Talha and I have been accepted as visiting fellows, which means we're getting a bit of extra support for the podcast. There's also a resident fellows program, so if you're interested in that, then go to the Integrity Institute website and check it out.